All right, and that was a young man by the name of Mandela Dunamis. I just love his music from his album Light Show. You gotta be you, and that's gonna be a good theme for tonight. I have a wonderful guest with me, I guess you call it your honor, right?
True, yes.
It's your honor, the mayor of Burlington, Mr. Ian. Let me see if I can get it. Baltutis.
That's right.
I had to practice that all day. So he's going to co-host with me, and we're going to go back and forth and stuff and try and get some stuff going. If you want to call in and ask a question, you can do that. And the number is 888-627-6008. And I'm sure he'd love to hear from you. Okay, so let's do a few announcements. Number one, up until recently, I've always had you try when you want to listen to the show live to sign in on your computer to bbsradio.com. They now have an app from the App Store, and I think Google has it too, where you can download it, and it's a one-button kind of thing for your iPad or your for your radio. Your cell phone. It has to be a smartphone, though. It can't be a dumb phone. That way, one button and you're in. So take a look at BBS Radio on the App Store, and you can connect with us without all the computer stuff. The pizza has arrived. Okay, good night. Oh, no. We try to multitask here to see if Judy can drop something while she's trying to talk. And sometimes that's what happens. The next thing is something I'm really proud of, and it's fun. And I want you to download this app. We're also on iTunes. I'm just taking up all the iTunes space right now. It's called 99 Sheep. I think I got about 9 episodes so far. And it is a humorous way to look at bringing people back to God. So you have to have your humor on, and you have to have a little bit of imagination. But 99 Sheep, and you can find that on iTunes, or I think Podomatic is the home base for it. Take a look, see what you do. We're one of the fastest growing podcasts right now, so take a look at us, 99 Sheep. All right, for all of you that have been sending me emails for the last month, the Christmas album is finished. I cut the last song last week. It has been mastered and all that fancy stuff. So we will have copies by Thanksgiving time. I do not charge for the album. However, I have a limited amount that I print. So if you want a copy of Joy, which is the name of the album, let me know and we'll try and get it out to you. Email address, of course, is revjudy@minister.com. Okay. Wow. And the last announcement, and this is a good one, and I expect you to show up next Saturday, Mayor, is this coming weekend is our church's annual Brunswick stew. We start on Thursday and go nonstop, 24
I've heard
all the way.
stories about the cooking of this, but.
Yes, and it's fun. I mean, when you've got the shift from 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. or whatever. Life's Journey makes is a recipe that's over 80 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty good stuff. We don't use skunks or squirrels anymore. Health department, they're so picky. But it's very good. You can pre-order it by calling the church office at 336-227-2174. Or you can call Irene Finelli, who's one of the council members, and she'll get it listed for you, 336 447-0672. The whole idea with Brunswick Stew, it's one of our biggest fundraisers of the year. So that's the money that we use for like special stuff. Don't ask me. I'm not on the council. I'm, you know, a minister, but I know it's special stuff they do. Really. All right. So I think I'm going to let you start with something. What would you like to say?
What would I like to say?
Yeah.
Well, I always like to talk about kind of the unique and non-unique situation that Burlington is in. And so when I tell folks that I'm the mayor of Burlington, I could be anywhere around the country. And now I say, oh, that's great. I love Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah.
I have to say, no. It's Burlington, North Carolina.
Where?
So we're one of 28 Burlingtons in the entire United States.
Really?
So there's a lot of us. But ironically, we're the largest Burlington out of all of those. We've got about 11,000 more people than Burlington, Vermont. But we're not quite there as far as that recognition factor. So I just got elected as mayor in 2015 and took office in December. And I'm not sure how long I'll be here, but I'd like by the time I leave office, for whenever I'm around the country saying I'm from Burlington, folks will say, oh, is that Vermont or North Carolina?
Right.
So we're going to do a lot of work in the next couple of years. But I think the success of it all will really depend on if folks start to recognize that there's more than just one Burlington in the United States.
Wow. Well, that's rather quite a goal. So you're just going to hop around and like a bunny and put little stickers and
graffiti
all over the place?
We're going to have to get busy if we want to do it.
Well, that's a good one. All right. So why did you choose to be mayor? You have your own business. You have all these other things in your life. Why be the mayor?
I think it kind of chose me. Back in 2013, in the summer, the election was coming up. And there's a filing period in June for a couple weeks. And our current mayor had filed for re-election, but nobody had filed to run against them. And we had a couple council members who'd filed. And I had a friend call me up. I was actually on vacation out on the West Coast visiting family in Portland. And that's Portland, Oregon, not one of the other Portlands. There's a couple of those out there, too. But friend called up and said, hey, I know you've thought about running for office and getting more involved beyond just the business community. What do you think about maybe running for council? And so we looked it up and talked to my fiance and decided, well, we'll give it a shot. And so we started filling out the form. And you get to a point where there's just a checkbox and says, are you running for council or are you running for mayor? And the thought had been, well, I'll run for council. That's a good start. And then said, well, if nobody else is running for mayor, isn't democracy supposed to be a conversation between two people?
Right.
That's how we make things work in this country. And so I said, well, shoot, we'll check that box for mayor and we'll carry this conversation forward. And so it all started from there.
Wow. And you started out the underdog, I hear.
The very much underdog. So anytime you're running against an incumbent, especially one that's been elected a number of times, at the time, Mayor Wall he's a wonderful member of our community. He's been involved in the school system and the United Way. He's done so much for the community of Burlington. So I was definitely the underdog. But I think we made such an impact that year in both getting folks interested in the election by going out knocking on doors, as well as just carrying forth kind of part of the conversation. So we talked about all different things affecting our community, but the biggest one was transportation. And we got people involved from all across the city. That conversation had been going on for years and years, but I think that mayoral race helped draw more attention to it, and it really got everybody on the same page. And by the end of that election, we didn't win. We got 35% of the vote. But I chalk up the victory as that we got a commitment out of everybody else running for election that year, that they said, we're going to make transportation happen. We're going to build a bus system in Burlington. And they committed to building a timeline for that project instead of just talking about it.
And we have a bus system.
We do. We launched one in June of this year. And it's Burlington's first fixed route bus system in at least four decades. So it's a bright new chapter for our community, and helping folks of all ages get to and from jobs, healthcare, education, whatever it is they need.
Shopping.
It's a big one.
Shopping. So where does the money come from? And I kind of know the answer, but tell the people where to come. I mean, that's a big investment in buses and maintenance crews and scheduling. And so where does that come from, a bond type program or?
For this, it did not come from bonds. It came from a number of different sources. And I have to credit council member Butler, who's been a member of our council for many, many years. He's been incredibly helpful in building the financing project for the bus system. And so it comes from a mixture of federal and local funding. So there are transportation dollars that we get or that go off in gas taxes. And that previously, before we had a bus system, those dollars that our citizens were paying were going to other communities that had bus systems. And so by building our system, we actually started to get those dollars back into our community. And so for years and years and years, we'd been paying for the bus systems in Wilmington and paying for the bus systems in Concord with our tax dollars. And so this was a way to bring those back into the community.
Wow. You know, I have a friend who lives right on the edge of Burlington in Gibsonville, where I am. It's a small community. And she lives actually in the senior apartments. And she is somewhat of a shut-in, but since the bus system, she's now able to go to the store for herself. She's wheelchair-bound, so she has to, I guess, make some adjustments to take the bus now. But, you know, she's was so excited for like 3 weeks before, you know, because the first week it was open, there was free bus rides and stuff. And several people from that location have said to me during visits, you know, what a great thing for older people who don't drive,
yeah.
You know, and that, you know, part of our population is getting larger as those of us who are the baby boomers are, you know, now pushing 60s and 70s. And it's nice to know that even though it won't come to my house here, I'm too far over the line, at least there's something, you know, and who knows, it might grow into something even bigger. So yeah. Great achievement.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that, like your friend, 12.6% of our senior citizens don't have a car, can't drive.
Yeah.
So there are lots of folks out there sharing that same story of how they're now able to interact with the community and really be a part of the city again, thanks to transportation.
You know, the truth is, and, you know, I'm a senior myself, even though I act 12. The truth is, older time have so much to give, you know, knowledge wise and stories, reading to children. You know, I want to start the book thing where you go in and you read to children because there's nothing like a book, you know. And so, you know, it's encouraging because some of these people really want to do that. You know, they just want to take one day and volunteer and, you know, do stuff. And I'm glad that there's a way for them to do that now. And I think there was something else you were talking to me about earlier.
We were talking about the new residence program,
yes,
which is a wonderful segue. Actually, that during my first election run in 2013, I was knocking doors. It's one of the things folks in Burlington know me for, is I'm that guy who came around and we knocked over 12,000 doors in the last 3 years in a community of 53,000 people. I think the newspaper quoted me at one point as saying I was trying to meet everybody in the community. I don't know that I'm going to ever get to meet everybody in our community, but I'm going to darn sure try. But while I was knocking doors in 2013, I knocked this one house and Thelma opened the door. And Thelma and her husband had moved to the community a number of years before. And just a couple of years after moving to Burlington, her husband passed away.
Hmm.
And all of a sudden, she was pretty much alone in a city that she hadn't really settled into. And that had been tough for her. Luckily, she found a local pastor who kind of helped her get connected with the congregation that was just a couple blocks away from her house. And she was able to kind of start to find her way through the community. But that got me thinking, along with many other conversations, that it's really, if we want to build a stronger community, we have to look at how are we making sure everybody feels welcome and finds their unique passion in our community. And so I continued asking folks whenever I knocked on their doors about their story. And in 2015, we specifically selected out new voters who had just come to the community. And those were my favorite conversations when we were knocking on doors, because it wasn't just, hi, my name's Ian, I'm running for mayor. It was, hi, I'm running for mayor. Welcome to the community. What brought you to Burlington? And the stories, the energy was just amazing. Everybody was excited that you cared that they just moved to the community. And so when I got elected, one of the things that I pledged to do in our first year was to work on building a new residence program, some way to help connect folks right when they move into the community with whatever it is, whether it's volunteering, whether it's reading, whether it's they've got kids and they want to find healthy, active activities for the kids, whatever it is that you want to get out of your city, we want to connect you with those resources. And so I'm proud to say that starting in January, we'll be kicking off the Belong in Burlington program, which is modeled after a book written by Melody Warnick called This Is Where You Belong. Just came out earlier this year. And it really talks about how do you build this connection with place. And we find that that connection is built through interaction, whether it's volunteering, whether it's working with school kids, whether it's helping do a neighborhood cleanup. Whatever it is, even just interacting with neighbors when you're out walking the dog, each of these things contributes to your connection to the community.
Right.
And so we as a city want to help facilitate that. So starting in just the next month or so, every new resident of the community in that first month or so will receive an invitation from the mayor, council, and the city, inviting them down to City Hall on a quarterly basis for coffee and donuts. And we'll have a number of stations set up where they can learn more about kids' activities and recreational activities, how to volunteer, about our pet adoption services, all different programs about our transit system. On top of that, they'll get to meet the council, meet the mayor, meet the city manager, the police chief, the fire chief, some of these folks who maybe you would get to meet after you lived in a community for a decade or more. Imagine within the first couple months of coming to a city and knowing all of those local leaders on a first name basis. Imagine what kind of connection that builds and how all of a sudden you're not just a new resident, you're not an outsider, you're a member of the Burlington and Alamance community.
And it's important. One of the things that I've run across in my ministry also, and we're working on this at Life's Journey, is building a sense of community for people, not being just a church, but being more, you know? And so it's encouraging to me that something like that would happen. And I hope it turns out we're going to have to get together in January and you're going to have to give me an update. Because when you come, I get to have pizza. That's not right.
Well, then we'll definitely have to come back in January.
And so, you know, one of the things that I find so interesting when talking to a young mayor, because, you know, a lot of people, when you say the word mayor, the vision is this elderly guy with white hair that, you know, is like the owl, you know, knows everything, sees everything, so on and so forth. And so it's kind of energetic to meet a young mayor, much younger, he's younger than my son, and see that there are ways to move rocks. There's ways to create, you know. And one of the things that a community needs to grow is a means by which to keep people active in that community. You know, I lived in a large community in California and watched it kind of go down a little bit because there wasn't anything for people to do.
Yeah.
You know, even when I retired, there was nothing for me to do. Well, I just created things.
Yeah.
So that's a great way to bring people together, you know, because the churches traditionally are the ones that do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of millenniums are not necessarily church-going people. That's why the Journey 8 started, was to reach people, you know, that don't normally go to church. And, you know, it's hard to create a community.
Yeah.
If you rely on the churches, although we do the best we can, to be the only way, you know. So especially with young adults, you know, you mentioned Bible and they run, you know, church. Yeah. So that's great. I'm going to be looking forward to that for sure. What's your feeling? Well, first of all, I have to put a plug in for tomorrow is Elections Day.
It is. Please make sure to get out
there.
Please
vote. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for or anything. Just vote. It's so important in this election. You know, voting is one of our constitutional rights. And as the patriot that I am, a long line of family military people, I can tell you that it's the best way to return the favor, shall I say, to those who serve this country and have died for this country and are willing to die for this country. Vote. Do your part. And if you can't get to the polls, there's all kinds of places that are offering rides.
Yep, there's plenty of ride services available. Mm-hmm. You can call our local NAACP. You can call the party offices.
Our churches providing.
Churches are offering rides.
You know, so. Don't use that as an excuse not to vote. There's all kinds of ways. And if you don't know a way, call the church and ask them how you get to your polling place. Do not be afraid to vote.
Yep. And don't overlook that neighbor, those family and friends.
Right.
Make sure they get out and vote. But if you need a ride, reach out.
Try and reach out. Don't stay home because you think you don't have a way to get there.
Yep.
God provides. Trust me.
Yeah.
So, you know, I had to say that. I just had to. And, you know, one of the things that's so important to those of us who are in the ministry is to see that people are taken care of. Now, we're not caretakers per se in the physical sense, but are taken care of emotionally, spiritually, and work through some of the issues of reaching out, especially among certain classes of people and so on. There's a lot of hate out there. There's a lot of rhetoric that is not true out there. And I know people sometimes get afraid. What will the, or if there is, a program in your mind about helping people overcome fear, overcoming the fear involved lately with violence and, you know, all this stuff. Of course, I'm going to tell you right now, people, if you haven't heard this, what you see on TV is not necessarily true. Believe half of what you read and none of what
version.
You see. But there is violence out there, and there is elderly people especially are victims, you know. In your mind, if you had a perfect world, what would you see or want to do to encourage people to live their lives? Don't be afraid.
I mean, so I've been listening to a lot of TED Talks lately from Eric Liu.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says that we're not consumers of democracy, we're participants in it. And so for our civilization, for our democracy, for our country and our even our local cities to work, we have to participate in it. We have to go out and we have to find our neighborhood. We have to find our support networks. Mm-hmm. And we have to build them. And sometimes we have to reach out to folks who don't have the energy or the resources to reach out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to each of us to realize that we have a role in building a safer community. And I have to credit our police department and our religious organizations, our churches, our NAACP, our schools, with all that we've seen with violence in the news lately. Burlington has done tremendous work building the connections within our community, working together to provide that support, to provide that counseling, that mentorship, whatever it is that folks need at different stages of their lives. Our community is working together to support and build that strength from within. We hope that that's building resiliency should we ever have a tragedy in our community. But sometimes we don't know what's coming. All we can do is prepare the best we can.
Right.
So, but it's up to each of us to realize that we all have a role in that preparation.
Yeah, and speaking of the police, a very close friend of mine, Officer Austin, who was my next door neighbor, and a very dedicated police. We got to watch the process of going through training and all. I don't think a lot of us understand what police officers do to be police officers, and the Burlington police especially are so compassionate. You know, we just donated a bunch of Starbucks bears that we had collected because they keep them in their car for the children when, you know, tragedy happens. And just stuff like that. A community is judged or reckoned by the way they take care of their people. Nothing else. You can build big, tall buildings and have all these beautiful fountains and what have you. But in the long run, it's how you take care of your people that makes you a good city, bad city, whatever. For us in the ministry, one of the things we see more often than not is, as I mentioned before, the forgotten ones, the shut-ins, the people that don't have the means financially to do the things they want. And someday, I hope, if it doesn't happen already or hasn't happened already, there's a program by which art, pottery, things that bring a spiritual sense to a person can be provided, shall we say, just to give them a sense of belonging. You know, you talk about the first or new residents. Yeah, and there's a lot of old residents too. Yeah. Someday I'll be one of those old decrepit people looking at the pottery. You know, but you know, we have an obligation, more so than any other generation. And you know, I was born in the 50s, so I've seen a few things happen. You know. And this generation, this time especially, to me, I see it as a time of healing, as a time of growing and growing together instead of, you know, we lived in an apartment complex in California for many a year, very nice location. We never knew any of our neighbors. Why? Because they worked two jobs. They don't go outside, you know, and it's sad because you see, you know, big old houses and everything, but people are house poor there, you know, and in the town I lived in, a house of the size I live in now would have been $3 million, you know. So, you know, there's this twisty-turny thing, shall I say, and, you know, one of the lovely things about Burlington, and I'm just going to flash to it, is I can walk down any street in Burlington, whether it's the good side of Burlington or the bad side. I haven't found a bad side yet, but
I haven't either. So,
in fact, the older side, the historic side of Burlington, is wonderful. My mother lived in an apartment complex right behind the church on Front Street that I can't think of the name of, which is a UCC church, and I'm sorry. First Redeemer, whatever it's called. And I loved walking in the neighborhood, that historic neighborhood of, what is it, 8 or 9 blocks. And to look at a house and say, I wonder who built this house. And, you know, because, the community is people. And I'm glad, I really hope your program in January works for the new people and gets them to stay and nestle in, shall we say. One of the things I'm going to do right now is we're going to take a break and eat the rest of our pizza here real fast. And I'm going to see if my engineer has the second song, which was slated as the first song. See, I just never do anything according to the script.
you down, knock you to the ground. If you let it, we were made to overcome. The victory is won, don't forget it.
And as my regular listeners know, that is one of my favorite songs by Karen Williams. And, we try and play, and I always put this in here, we try and play indie music. And I'm always looking for new artists. You can always write me and send me your music. Be glad to listen to it and get it on the air, because airtime, I understand, is the hardest thing for artists that don't have a lot of money. So don't be afraid to send it to me, RevJudy@minister.com.
I do appreciate your upbeat music selection choices.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, when I started the show, I thought everybody wanted to hear hymns or, high religion. And then I realized, people were snoring. And so I am an upbeat kind of person. And most of the music that comes across my desk from the people at BBS Radio is gospel, good, solid gospel, or rock and roll. I think being a kid, raised in the 60s and 70s, I'm always going to choose rock and roll. But there's an amazing number of artists out there. All they need is just that one break. So if I can help some singer, get that one break by somebody listening to their song on their radio or whatever, more power to them. Yeah. That's part of the ministry. So
well, before that musical break, you were talking about enjoying walking our historic neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminded me of a quote that I use this all the time because I love the way the former mayor of Bogota, Colombia said this, Enrique Pinoza. And he said, God made us walking animals, pedestrians. As a fish needs to swim, a bird to fly, a deer to run, we need to walk, not in order to survive, but to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a period in our city building where we focused too much on the automobile, mm-hmm. and we kind of lost that connection that, at the end of the day, if you can't walk from your home to someplace, mm-hmm. something interesting, something active, then you don't really have anything around you. And so now we're kind of looking back at our city and saying, how do we fix this? How do we build a community where no matter where you live in our community, you have something and you have a way to get there? You have that fail-safe that connects you to people, connects you to spirituality, wherever you find it.
Yeah, there's a community in California that did the same thing. They were, up and running semiconductor kind of people, and they took and created small gardens, here and there, coffee shops. So you could take a walk and sit and have coffee, or, there was a bagel shop, and it was all strategically located within this, I won't call it a park, it's part of the city. And it was very, very popular because people sometimes, especially older people like myself who have a problem walking, can't walk long distances. But boy, to get out and go to a place like that where, you can spend the day practically just, walking around, and there was an art studio there and just, stuff. And people like that. I mean, more people, I think, would come back to walking if there was a place for them to walk to.
Yeah. We were reading a book for our mayor's book club. One of the other things that I did when I got elected was we decided we're going to have a mayor's book club. So we chew on a book every month, everything from drug addiction to city building, mm-hmm. to treating each other with respect. We love picking all different titles. And one of them was Walkable City by Jeff Speck. And he had four conditions that you need for a walk. And it's got to be useful. It's got to be safe.
Yeah.
And so it's one thing to just say, oh, there's a walking path.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not useful, safe, comfortable, and interesting, it's not going to work. You've got to have those four aspects in order for it to really be an experience.
Yeah, and we have some beautiful botanical gardens in the Triad area, but not everybody's a flower lover, you know? And don't take me wrong, I'm not, you know, discounting the beauty of gardens, but there are people that have, you know, diversity and want to have, like you said, you know, all those things. And it's not hard to take property. I mean, there's a lot of condemned property around and stuff, and create this community within a community. You know, where I find fun sometimes is going to the Burlington co-op.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Our wonderful downtown
co-op. Something always going on there, yeah. You know. But I think it would be neat to have some kind of setup where, you know, like I said, you've got this little hubbub. You know, people meet each other and talk mm-hmm. about, you know, whatever's on the agenda for the council meeting or, mm-hmm. you know, just sit and talk about stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what a city is. I mean, it's we come together as people in order to interact. And civilization is all about this civil interaction with each other. And really, that happens in cities. And it happens mostly in our downtowns. And I think it's been sad to watch communities all around our country have their downtowns kind of empty out and become desolate places. But it's always so inspiring to see the life come back to those places because that's the heart of the community.
It is.
And when that heart begins to beat again.
It is. And, you know, not that churches don't take as big a role as they can in creating community with people. But, you know, a lot of people, like I said, want to go to an art gallery and just walk around and look at the paintings or a sidewalk art show. You know, those are always great ways to get people out and walking and, hey, Drew, how you doing? Sally.
Have those spontaneous interactions. Yes. So.
So that, Mr. Mayor, is an idea I'll put in your pocket.
I love it.
And, you know, one of the best ways to get people to do things is to show them, you know, give them the visual, you know, picture that the architect draws, you know, look at this and get excited about it, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. You gotta share that vision.
Well, yeah. And the city that grows and becomes successful is the city that will find the key to all these things. Yeah. Now, obviously, it can't be done in 2 years, so I expect that you'll have about six retries at being
we'll keep working
mayor. Okay, and this time we're going to... it's definitely something you want to do. So give me a clue. What's your next big project? Okay, we talked about the bus. We talked about January. What else?
So our city just hired a new economic development director. So as we see life coming back to our city, we still see these pockets throughout our community of either abandoned buildings or abandoned factories, or just areas that people want to see something happen, whether it's a green field or something needs to change. And so the city's decided to take a more active role in encouraging development in these areas. And what we found is that traditional economic development, like we all hear about incentives and bringing jobs to a community, it's mostly about building greenfield sites out in the outskirts of the community. And so in order for us to bring more of that development within the city, we need to be a leader in that. We need to take a look at each of these pieces of property, and we need to answer a lot of the questions that are preventing developers from working on them. And usually it's who owns it? Is it tied up in a family trust? What's the zoning on it? Is there utilities, sewer, water, those kind of things? And so if the city answers those questions ahead of time, then it makes it easier for the folks in our community who are already doing the economic development, like our Chamber of Commerce and our Burlington Downtown Corporation, makes it easier for them to do their job. So we've created this new department. We've hired a new developer, Peter Bishop. He'll be in the city starting Monday after Thanksgiving, so right around the corner. And he'll be tasked with really building that vision for how we're going to continue to grow the community. At the same time, he'll be working directly with existing businesses and helping to encourage that spirit of entrepreneurship, which has always helped our community grow.
Yeah, that's great because, you know, you can drive through any city. I'm not going to pick on Burlington for sure, but any city. And, you know, you look and you say, what's the story behind this property? It's been sitting here, you know, and we know generally you know, the textiles and stuff. But, you know, I'm a firm believer, and my background, of course, is engineering and stuff, but I'm a firm believer that a building has more than one life. And to repurpose, you know, a building or a piece of property and turn it into a community garden or whatever, you know, fits that area. Because we drive all over the town for stuff. And that's my biggest thing is I look at a building and I say, what?
What could it be?
What could it be? Because what it was is already not. But what could it be? Could it be a daycare system for kids or, you know, a game port? A lot of people are now reusing older computers, updating them, and making them into a game site that's monitored for kids, that's safe for underprivileged, you know, children and stuff. There's 100,000 things you can do with a building if it's still sturdy and capable of being repurposed.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then it's time to say, but the property can be repurposed.
Yep. What, you know? What else could be there? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think there's so many folks in our community who are walking past these places every day saying, what if that was something? And so I've always seen my role as mayor as being this champion of ideas. And so it's about meeting these folks and helping connect them with whatever resources it takes to make that idea a reality. Because for us as a city to look at that building and say, you know, it would be really good there. Any idea we throw out is probably wrong.
Yeah.
The folks who live in those communities, who see those buildings every day, they know best what should be there. And it's our role as a city to help make their dreams for their community a reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the people that have to live there.
Yeah.
You know, those are the people who, you know, some of the people in the area that I'm thinking about are third and fourth generation in that same house.
Yeah.
You know? And so they've watched their part of the city kind of fall asunder because of the demise of local industry. But they would be the ones, if you canvass them, to say, that building over there on such and such street, if you had your wish, what would you like to make it? Some might say a mini brewery. Some might say a restaurant that serves coffee and cheesecake or whatever, you know, open market.
Yeah.
Because, again, they have to live there. So,
yeah.
And some of them might say, I don't know, the building's so old, what would you do with it?
But it's important to have that conversation. So.
Yes, yes, it is. It's, it's a long process.
It is.
But it can be a very valuable one, especially to the growth of a city.
Yeah. So as the youngest mayor in this community, I know I haven't had some of the experiences that other members in our city have, but I love history. And I love learning about what has come and gone in our community. And so one of the things that I started is working with some of the historians in our community and our librarians to put together a map of all the historic neighborhoods in our community. Because I think neighborhood identity is so critical to building that vision for what that building and what your neighborhood can become. And knowing where you live is important. But I think Some of us know what our neighborhoods are, others don't. Where I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, we all knew our neighborhoods. Minneapolis has very strong neighborhood identity. And so we're working with these historians. I'm hoping to put together a map that we'll have ready by next year to give folks a framework of what the history of their community was. And then from there, let them take that and carry it forward into the new chapter of their identity.
Yeah. Before I retired, I worked as an environmental consultant. And part of my specialty was what they call phase one reports. And because I'm a historian, I used to love going back to the city and doing the history on a piece of property and looking at the old maps, you know, and saying, okay, this property was a horse and buggy. Oh, look, in this year it was a blacksmith. And it was really neat because it was history and I love history. So, you know, that was the most fun part of doing those reports, you know, was looking at the historical documents on file.
Yeah. I think the more you dig through history, you realize that everyone's path to success or wherever they get in life is really convoluted and a squiggly line. And so when you dig through and you say, you know, that building that now is a wonderful Co-op grocery store, it's beautiful as a Co-op grocery store. It's been so many things and so many people's dreams through the years, and everybody's had stumbles and successes and buildings have had heydays and they've had down days. And we keep working through it. And so.
Well, and the fact remains that if you don't repurpose existing property, you're going to run out of space. You know, you only got so much space. So, you know, at some point, either you or the next mayor or whomever is going to be faced with that challenge anyway.
We're
so why not take it on now?
Yeah.
And a lot of houses are empty. So let's find a way to, you know, refurbish them. I know Habitat for Humanity does a great job, but, you know, they can't take it all on.
Yeah.
You know, those are all dreams that most politicians have and people. I, you know, would love to have another 20 or 30 years to, you know, wave a magic wand and do some of those things. Because it would be fascinating for me to look at the historical neighborhoods. A lot of neighborhoods people wouldn't even think were historical.
Yeah.
You know, they're just dumpy, you know, or whatever. Yeah. And you find out that, you know, so-and-so lived there or whatever. Mm-hmm. So how interesting.
Yeah.
Well, we are winding close to being down. So I'm going to ask you one more time. What else do you want to say? Here it is. This is the big statement.
The big statement. Oh, goodness. You didn't tell me I was going to do a big statement. Well, I think the message that I carry out wherever I'm going, and I speak to a lot of kids, being the youngest mayor, it's really easy to identify with kids, even though I'm 31 now. Whether I'm talking to preschoolers, I try not to make you feel old. Whether I'm talking to preschoolers or high schoolers, or seniors, I try to share that we each have this role in building our community. We each, at our this given moment in our life, have a unique perspective on what's going on in our community and around us. And in order for us to succeed as a city, as a society, we have to share that perspective. Because I don't see the same thing you do. Mm-hmm. I don't see the same thing a second grader does. And so without us talking and sharing and communicating and collaborating, we can't become a stronger city. And so my role has been, how do we get more folks to see that I need to share this. I need to say there's an opportunity right there on that corner. We need to turn it into a skate park or whatever it is and help enable those folks.
Yeah. So as we wind down, and my producer is telling me I have 60 seconds. Can you believe that?
So
we're going to say goodnight, and he's going to play our closing song by Will of Titus, my favorite. Yes, they were my first band that I brought out, shall we say. Will of Titus, Sleep Well.
Remember, it was designed for you. With every every little step that you take.